You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Tuesday, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was at the Air Force Academy for their commencement on May 25th. And I thought you should hear his comments in particular. They're just they're great leadership comments, so always makes you pause and think. And so without any further ado, General Joseph Dunford. You'll hear him introduced to the crowd, and voila.
Hey, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's an absolute honor to be here today and join in this special day. Secretary Wilson, thanks for that introduction, but more importantly, thanks for your willingness to come back and serve as our Secretary of the Air Force. And I know I speak for all the Academy grads and all of our airmen to know that they're very, very happy to have one of their own as flight lead. And the General Goldfein and Chief Wright, thanks for your leadership. I would just tell you, and I think you all know, we have exactly the right team in General Goldfein and Chief Wright, leading our Air Force into the future. And General Johnson, I'd also like to speak about your leadership just for a minute, both here at the Academy and throughout your distinguished career. I feel fortunate to have served as your wingman in a previous assignment and to have watched you in action. And I know today that we're going to talk a lot about the performance of the cadets out here. We're going to talk about how great the United States Air Force Academy is. And it's all the better for having had your leadership here over the last few years. Thanks. Thanks, Michelle. And most importantly, to the class of 2017. You know, I know today caps what's been a busy week with various events to recognize your accomplishments. And I'm sure you're feeling pretty good at this point, and you should. 4 years ago, you accepted a challenge to attend the Academy. Based on your performance in high school, you could have done many other things. You could have taken the easy way. But you didn't. You came to Colorado Springs, and you challenged yourself physically, mentally, and academically. From Yellow Footprints to Jack's Valley, from recognition to Saturday morning inspections, you've had early mornings, late nights, and tough training. And due to sequestration, you even survived the great toilet paper shortage of 2013. An extraordinary accomplishment in and of itself. On a serious note, you've accomplished a great deal, and you deserve to be congratulated. But I'd also, as Secretary Wilson did, I'd also like to thank you for answering the call to service during a very challenging time. The world changed when you were about 5 years old, and we've been at war now for almost 16 years. And I'm sure you accept your commissions today with your eyes wide open to the challenges ahead. To that point, today there's more than 100,000 airmen standing watch around the world. Many are directly supporting combat operations, and they're joined by thousands more soldiers, sailors, and Marines. As we conduct this ceremony, and as you leave here today, I'd ask you to keep them and their families in your thoughts and prayers. While those of you graduating today should be proud of what you accomplished, I'm also sure that you recognize you didn't get here by yourself. And Secretary Wilson spoke about it. General Johnson spoke about it. You had your support of your families, and they were there when the challenges here at the Academy brought a slight bend to your knees, and they inspired you to get through tough times. And appropriately enough, a minute ago, you stood up and you said thanks. And I would tell you right now, as I look out, I think I have the best position in the stadium because I'm able to look out there and see the proud faces of your parents, your brothers, your sisters, your grandparents, all here today to recognize your achievements. I also want to recognize once again the faculty and the staff. They've worked hard over the past 4 years to teach, to coach, to mentor you, and they also have a reason to be proud today. And I think the most important thing that the faculty and staff at the Academy does here, they show you what right looks like. And I will tell you that's exactly what they have done. They have shown you what right looks like. And I'd ask you once again to please recognize the faculty, the staff, the mentors that have allowed you to be here today. Graduates, today marks a critical inflection point in your lives. As graduates of the Academy and men and women heading off to be leaders in our Air Force, and a few of you in the Army, Navy, and Marine Corps, your priorities are going to change. After today, the focus is not on you anymore. It's not about your GPA, your MPA, or your PEA. It's not about the superintendent's pin on your uniform, and it's not about your accomplishments on the athletic field. After today, your success is seldom going to be measured by what you as an individual can achieve. Most often, it's going to be about what your squadron achieves. And it's going to be how you inspire those you lead to excellence that really matters. And I know you appreciate that point because for the past 4 years, while you've been studying aerodynamics, learning how to write code, or beating the Naval Academy on the football field, it pains me to say that. Everything you've done has come down to this. You've answered the call to lead in our Air Force. Now, I've been in your shoes, and although, as the Secretary mentioned, I was commissioned 40 years ago this week, I can actually clearly recall my own graduation and how anxious I was on that day, like I'm sure you are, to get on with the next phase of my life. And I wasn't interested at all in what my graduation speaker had to say. And I'm going to assume, and I think safely, I'm going to assume that many of you share the same sentiment. But before you move on to tackle the challenges ahead, I just want to take a few minutes and just share with you a few personal thoughts on leading in the 21st century. The first point I'd make is that to be successful, individuals being commissioned today have to be flexible. Flexibility is not only the key to air power, flexibility is a key attribute for you as a leader. When you drive out the South Gate this afternoon, you need to do so with a willingness to embrace and to lead change. In some very fundamental ways, the environment which you're going to lead is going to be quite different than the one that confronted Lieutenants Wilson, Lieutenant Goldfein, and Lieutenant Dunford. And perhaps one of the most striking differences affecting the professions of arms today is the pace of change. And again, Secretary Wilson alluded to that. In my own career, I can't think of a time when the pace of change has been even close to what it is today. When I was a lieutenant in 1977, we used the same cold weather gear my dad had used in Korea 27 years earlier. And I don't mean the same type of gear. I mean the same gear dug out of a warehouse that had been used 27 years earlier. Our radios, our rifles, and our machine guns were from Vietnam. The Jeeps would have been familiar to World War II veterans, and to be quite honest with you, so would the tactics. Today, Marines are wearing protective equipment, employing weapons, driving vehicles, and flying aircraft that would be unrecognizable to Marines who got off active duty just a few years ago. And our command and control systems have completely changed battlefield geometry on the ground. And today, similar challenges can be found across the joint force. And these changes have implications. They have implications at the strategic level, the operational level, and the tactical level. But for most of you here today, it's the pace of change in the United States Air Force that's most relevant. If I'd been commissioned as a pilot in the Air Force in 1977, I'd have navigated with paper maps, not GPS. I'd have calculated bomb angles with a grease pencil on the glass of my cockpit, communicated only line of sight, and dropped unguided bombs. The basic technology in 1977 hadn't changed in decades, and there wasn't much of a conversation about space in cyberspace. Today, while recognizing that we've fallen behind in modernizing some of our platforms, the Air Force that you are joining is much, much different than even a short time ago. In the past few years, the world's greatest Air Force has tripled the number of remotely piloted aircraft. It's leaped forward with advancements in space, command and control systems, cyber capabilities, stealth, and precision capabilities. The Air Force has fielded the fifth-generation F-22. It's now fielding the F-35. And those are platforms that aren't just going to improve how we fight. Those are platforms that are going to transform how we fight in the United States Air Force and across the Joint Force. And the pace of change is not going to stop when you graduate. By the time that you make major, the United States Air Force is going to look much different than it does even today. That said, if you remain flexible and consider your experience here in the Academy merely the beginning of a lifelong pursuit of education, you're going to be capable of leading that change and adapting to new and unforeseen challenges. I want to shift gears for a minute and talk about an aspect of our profession that hasn't changed through the years. What hasn't changed is that the military profession, at the end of the day, is about people. And the primary difference between success and failure on and off the battlefield has historically been about the human. It's been about the human, not about the hardware. In fact, notwithstanding all the changes in our profession that I highlighted, I believe you can primarily attribute any success that we've had in the battlefield in our history to the actions of individual sailors, soldiers, airmen, and Marines. Their willingness to go out day after day and do what must be done has made the difference. And that willingness didn't come from doctrine, techniques, or new weapon systems or equipment. The will to endure when the mission is tough, the willingness to put yourself at risk, to put the needs of your wingman ahead of your own, all that comes from intangibles. A World War I Marine described those intangibles as such things as regiments hand down forever. And in this venue, I'd ask you to think about them as such things as squadrons hand down forever. And, of course, I'm referring to qualities like courage, honor, commitment, loyalty, and selflessness. To illustrate the point I'm trying to make, I'd like to quickly share two stories of ordinary airmen who accomplished extraordinary things. Some of you might know the name Richard Brims. He's buried here in the Academy's grounds, and his story lives on the Plaza of Heroes right over near Doolittle Hall. But in June of 1971, he was sitting exactly where you're sitting today. Dick was a likable and athletic kid. He grew up in an Air Force family. After a year of college, he attended a prep school, eventually becoming part of the class of 1971. As a cadet, he was known for his sense of humor, and on graduation day, he and a few of his classmates borrowed the 8-foot sign. You know that sign that says, "Now leaving the United States Air Force Academy"? Well, he and his classmates borrowed that sign, and it was actually right here at graduation. I'm telling you this today, not yesterday, so that we don't repeat that offense. Just 4 years after his graduation spirit mission, Lieutenant Brims was a mission-qualified CH-53 pilot stationed in Thailand. In May of 1975, 2 weeks after the fall of Saigon and the end of the Vietnam War, Cambodian soldiers of the brutal Khmer Rouge seized the merchant ship SS Mayaguez in the Gulf of Thailand. The U.S. responded immediately with a joint team, and Lieutenant Brims' squadron was dispatched to support a battalion of Marines to rescue the ship and a crew of 39. The plan called for the Marines to be inserted in a nearby island named Koh Tang. It was heavily defended by Khmer Rouge, armed with heavy machine guns, grenades, rockets, and missiles. But Lieutenant Brims successfully landed his Marines under fire, and then he remained in the landing zone to evacuate 5 wounded Marines. While he was refueling back in Thailand, things went from bad to worse on the island. 11 helicopters were lost to enemy fire, leaving only 3 to extract the more than 200 Marines who were still on the island. Despite intense fire and near total darkness, Lieutenant Brims returned to the landing zone twice. The enemy was so close and so numerous at one point that those crew that weren't manning machine guns actually pushed the windows out of the helicopter and were engaging the enemy around the helicopter with small arms. On his last trip, Lieutenant Brims made 3 unsuccessful attempts to land. And the Marines on the island, they tried to wave him off. They said it was too dangerous for Lieutenant Brims and his crew to come back. But he wasn't about to abandon those Marines, and in his 4th attempt, he landed. He loaded 27 Marines. He held his position under fire while one of his crewmen ran to a tree line to grab 2 other Marines who were still putting down a suppressive base of fire to allow the evacuation to take place. Dick Brims was awarded the Air Force Cross for his actions that day on Koh Tang, and he's justly remembered as a hero. But that hero sat right where you are today. He walked the same halls, and he studied the same subjects. He's the same guy that was pulling pranks on graduation day. He was an ordinary airman who did extraordinary things. Ladies and gentlemen, Dick Brims was killed on a training mission in 1986, but we're honored to have today his widow with us, Mrs. Christina Brims, who's right over here to my right, and I'd ask you to please recognize her. Christina, please stand up. You know what Lieutenant Brims did was over 40 years ago, but you actually don't have to open the history books to find ordinary airmen doing extraordinary things. The second story I just want to share with you is about a major by the name of Alex Hill. Alex is not much different than most of you. He grew up in Tacoma, Washington. He wrestled and he ran cross country. He lived in the shadow of his grandfather, a retired Air Force Master Sergeant, and his father, a retired Air Force officer. In 2006, he earned his commission, and he went to pilot training. He married his college sweetheart, and today they've got two beautiful daughters. Last November, Major Hill was in Afghanistan commanding an AC-130 gunship called Spooky 4-3. One day, he and his 13 crew members were providing overwatch for a team of 55 Americans and Afghan Special Operations Forces. The ground team was ambushed, quickly surrounded, and within minutes, those folks on the ground took 20 casualties. Major Hill and his crew jumped into action, and they began firing the enemy, mostly within 40 meters of friendly forces. By any definition, danger close. Their actions allowed the ground force to recover the wounded, but it didn't stop the enemy attack. So the ground controller cleared into fire within 25 meters, and then again within 15 meters, getting closer and closer to the troops on the ground. The crew shot so many 105-millimeter rounds that the guns started to overheat, risking a detonation inside of the aircraft. With the situation on the ground desperate, Alex decided to continue firing despite the risks. After an hour of intense fighting, Major Hill and his crew were down to just eight airburst round 105s. Due to its lethality, this particular round is normally short hundreds of meters from friendly fire. But with the ground force still in grave danger and no other alternative, Major Hill decided to engage with that round. They loaded the breech and engaged the closest enemy group 12 meters from the friendlies that were pinned down. That's the closest distance ever recorded by an AC-130. And that annihilated the enemy formation with a single shot. Major Hill and his crew returned to base to rearm and refuel, and then they went back to support. By now, it's broad daylight. In total, Spooky 4-3 fired 21 danger close missions that day and saved over 50 lives on the ground. That's an impressive team performance, and you can look it up and read about it on the Internet. But what you won't read is that this was the first deployment for four of the crew members, and amazingly, the first combat mission for one of them. You won't read that one of the sensor operators missed the crew brief that day. The major let him go off and join a video teleconference, which was actually the memorial service of one of his fellow airmen. You're not going to read that one of the loadmasters was being treated for combat stress because he had a close encounter with a surface-to-air missile 1 year prior in the very same area that that action took place. And you won't read that when Major Hill landed to rearm and refuel, he put his hand on each and every one of his crewmen. He looked them in the eyes to see, were they okay? He also asked them, do you want to go back? Can you go back? None of them hesitated. They all went back. Major Hill's crew performed that day not because he was a major, but because he was a leader with a warrior ethos, a leader that was technically and tactically competent, of that there's no doubt, but most importantly, a leader that trusted and cared for his airmen, and he earned their trust in return. Today, Major Hill is still out there doing extraordinary things. Now, those of you that are still with me may have a hard time identifying with an action that took place 40 years ago or combat conditions that perhaps most of you haven't yet experienced. You may actually have taken a deep gulp and wondered if you possess the courage of Richard Brims or the leadership of Major Hill. And I understand that, and the day I was commissioned, I had the same thoughts run through my mind. Am I good enough? But in all sincerity, as I stand here with you today, I don't share those concerns. If my experience makes me confident of anything, it makes me confident in the product we produce here at the United States Air Force Academy. It makes me confident in you, even though we just met. I don't share your concern because I'm absolutely confident that you will measure up to the task at hand. You lead change, and you will inspire your airmen. But don't get me wrong, I'm not for a minute understating the complexity of today's security environment, nor the challenges that you're likely to confront as leaders. Your predecessors have done truly remarkable things. But if you think carefully about the stories that I shared, the qualities reflected in Lieutenant Brims and Major Hill weren't actually unique to the battlefield. It wasn't mostly about courage under fire that distinguished Lieutenant Brims and Major Hill. The primary reason your predecessors were successful is because they recognized that it wasn't about their individual actions or their individual capabilities. It was about the Marines on Koh Tang Island. It was about the special operators on the ground in Afghanistan. And it was about the crew in that AC-130. Your predecessors knew that individual competence, intellect, and physical skills, they're all actually part of the sticker price of being an officer. You're not going to need more credit for that after today. You're not going to get any more credit for that. It's a given. Your predecessors knew it was about leading from the front and instilling esprit in their units, a bond of trust within their crews, and a commitment to excellence and to the mission. Your predecessors knew that to be successful, you have to combine the passion that you've developed here at the United States Air Force Academy for our profession with compassion and sincere concern for every individual you will be fortunate enough to lead. Your predecessors knew that if you take care of your airmen, they're going to take care of you, and they're going to get the job done. So in these final moments of your four-year journey, I'd ask you to remember that what's going to distinguish you as a leader is not your ability to develop cyber tools, fly a joint strike fighter, or maintain a satellite constellation. We expect you to do all that. You're graduates of the United States Air Force Academy. What's going to distinguish you as a leader is your personal example, your ability to create an environment in which those intangible qualities I spoke about, those qualities that are passed down from one generation of airmen to the next, your task, what will distinguish you as a leader, is your ability to create a climate within which those qualities flourish. And once again, as I look at our newest leaders, I've got confidence, great confidence, in our Air Force, great confidence, and I have great confidence in you. And now, graduates, it's time to lead. God bless you all, and good luck.
He's awesome. Honestly, as a guy, as a leader, when you get a chance to see him, the way he deals with people is very cool. Very cool. We'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, the Secretary of Defense was at Annapolis. He was at West Point, and his speech is Dunford's awesome, right? Mattis is better. Yeah, they have this kind of like crazy dueling, you know, who's better? But that's why I say one of the coolest things about having them both being very all in, and I throw Kelly in there too because he's a gifted speaker as well. You get a chance to hear the values, what's expected, in this culture of it's my right. Where we don't speak of duty very often, you hear the word duty when these guys speak. Okay, what's expected of you? What is your responsibility? Different, completely counter to what our culture talks about on a daily basis, on a nightly basis, what we see on our TVs. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug. Home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug, scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Various media outlets are reporting an incident in Paris. A man attacked an officer with a hammer. The man was then evidently shot. Initial reports are that he's not dead. Can you imagine that? A guy hits a cop with a hammer outside of a place. Outside of a famous place, you know, the Cathedral of Notre Dame, of all places. What the hell? What's wrong with the Catholic, the Protestant shrines? Why do you got to do that stuff around the Catholics? That's international news now. The police presence in and around, I was thinking about this, my experience in Iraq. I'm watching, you know, the video of it right now. Often they would precipitate a small event to get a big event, right? Send somebody to hit somebody with a hammer, knowing that the QRF is going to respond. And really what they wanted was, they wanted a high density of people to show up for the next event. A complex, professional. But, so that thought goes through my head today. Anyway, So, Secretary of Defense at West Point is awesome. Is awesome. So, without further ado, Secretary Mattis's speech, I want to say, is about 15 minutes, and we may or may not get to Ben Conable today. We may do just go through the news headlines. I'll keep you updated on what's going on in France right now. But a hammer attack at the Cathedral of Notre Dame now is international news as the world waits for the next one of these stupid events to happen. And so, again, I just question, you know, when you're on the internet, when you're traveling to those countries, how many indicators do we need that you've thrown in with them before we detain you as a combatant or a suspected combatant? Or is the threshold of evidence in this democracy such that we need to hope that you that you speed on your way to kill people, so we pull you over, and then inadvertently, and then you would pull over, then we'd say, oh, what are all those guns and hand grenades doing in the back? We're on our way. Oh, hey, we caught you. Thank God. We, you know, we preserved everybody's civil liberties, and we're all happy. So this is awesome. I love how democracy works. Maybe in this world, maybe we do have to compromise on our civil rights. Maybe that's one of the costs of you can't have it your way. It can't always be the way you want it. Yeah, what a shock, huh? What an absolute shock to the American people. What do you mean I can't have it the way I want it? What do you mean I might be detained or pulled in to be questioned? Or, guess what, I might be detained and categorized as a possible enemy combatant and held. Is that not possible in this war of a thousand shades of gray? Whoa, 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 hey, what are you trying to do? What I'm trying to do is maybe protect people? Yeah, that's too crazy. Really? All right. And I'll tell you what, the Brits, I mean, I'll tell you what, if I normally glance at the Drudge Report on a daily basis. If you glance at the Drudge Report right now, what you'll find is a headline in the Sun, right? These are the British tabloids. Why didn't they stop TV jihadi? London Bridge killer watched by millions on 04 and by MI5, which is the British Intelligence Service. The Daily Mirror headline. So how the hell did he slip through? And it shows a picture of him with an ISIS banner. Evidently these guys going through some kind of either ritual or doing something in a public park in Great Britain. That doesn't get your ass yoked up. Hey, freedom of speech. It's funny to hear Muslims say, if you could hear what they're saying, because we don't understand the Arabic language very well, if you could hear what they're saying, what the hell? So, yeah, we're afraid. Our democratic background doesn't conceive of them. It doesn't accommodate them. And so, as a result, they exploit us. And maybe that's just the way it is. Maybe that's just the way it is in a democracy when you're into this. And again, this is from a country that's already digested. This is from a country that's already digested two of its tallest buildings being dropped. And I think we've become a bit numb to it. So anyway, we'll retreat back into the world that we know. So here is Secretary of Defense James Mattis speaking to a culture that we would invite the rest of the planet to join, one of duty, one of courage, one of commitment, one of sacrifice, one where you may not get to have everything you want the way you want it. So With that said, this speech is awesome, by the way. And I would tell you this, that if you have young people in your family, in your reach, I don't care if you're a teacher, I don't care if you're a coach, I sent this to both my sons, the captain and the lieutenant, and said, you need to, I'm ordering you to watch this, which got a curious response. I'm ordering both you numbskulls to watch this. And then if you're smart and you can comprehend this, and I'm not sure that you can, then I would tell you that if you don't share it with your own Marines, you're not the smart kids I think you are. So they both messaged me back and said, he's awesome. He's awesome. How the hell did you ever work for him? That's right, boys. Smile and wave. Smile and wave. All right, here he is at West Point.
Secretary Jim Mattis. Thank you. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. What a day. As the chaplain put it, what a happy day for our graduates here this morning, for the families that have nurtured them and raised them to take on these challenges, certainly for these over to your left flank here, the ones who want to be graduating, and for the class of 2018, you're not getting out a month early. By golly, if this class had to go through the full course of difficulty, so will you. But it's also a great day for the U.S. Army, General Milley, to have this reinforcement secretary coming into the Army. And it's a great honor, ladies and gentlemen, for me to be here today at West Point. It's one of the foundational keystones of our nation. And to join you on behalf of our Commander-in-Chief, President Trump, to pay his respects and the respects of the American people to the Military Academy class of 2017. I would never have imagined, ladies and gentlemen, that when I joined the military at age 18, that I'd be standing here, nor can you graduates anticipate where you'll be many years from now. By the time this class was in first grade classrooms in every state across our Union, our country had been thrust into a war by maniacs who thought that by hurting us, they could scare us. Well, we don't scare, and nothing better represents America's awesome determination to defend herself than this graduating class. Every one of you. Every one of you could have opted out. You'd grown up seeing the war on round-the-clock news. There was no draft. Colleges across this land would have moved heaven and earth to recruit you for schools that would never make such demands on you as West Point, starting with Beast Barracks, an aptly named introduction to the long gray line, creating American soldiers who are at their very best when the times are at their very worst. Today, in honoring you graduates, in celebrating your achievements, and giving thanks for your commitment, we can see clearly your role in our world. You graduate the same week that saw the murder of 22 innocent young lives. Manchester's tragic loss underscores the purpose for your years of study and training at this elite school. For today, as General Caslin said, you join the ranks of those whose mission is to guard freedom and to protect the innocent from such terror. The innocent noted in your class motto, so others may dream. We must never permit murderers to define our time or warp our sense of the normal. This is not normal. And each of you cadets graduating today are reinforcing the ranks of our Army, bringing fresh vigor, renewing our sense of urgency, and enhancing the Army's lethality needed to prove our enemies wrong. You will drive home a salient point that free men and women will volunteer to fight ethically and fiercely to defend our experiment that you and I call simply America. You graduates commissioned today will carry the hopes of your country on your young shoulders. You will now join the ranks of an army at war. Volunteers all, we are so very proud of you cadets for taking the place you have earned in the unbroken line of patriots who have come before. Your oath of office connects you to the line of soldiers stretching back to the founding of our country, and in the larger sense, it grows from ancient, even timeless roots, reflecting the tone and commitment of youth long ago who believed freedom is worth defending. In terms of serving something larger than yourself, yours is the same oath that was taken by the young men of ancient Athens. They pledged to fight for the ideals and sacred things of their city, to revere and obey the city's laws and do their best to incite a like respect in others, and to pass on their city-state far greater and more beautiful than they had received it. In that sense, it is fitting the cadet cover you wear today for the last time features the helmet of the Greek goddess Athena, echoing respect of the civic duty that's found in a democracy and in a nation, in President Lincoln's words, of the people, by the people, for the people. After 4 years at West Point, you understand what it means to live up to an oath. You understand the commitment that comes with signing a blank check to the American people, payable with your life. My fine young soldiers, a few miles northwest of Washington, D.C., where I work today, at Antietam Battlefield Cemetery, is a statue of a Union soldier standing at rest and overlooking his comrades' graves. It is inscribed with the words, "Not for themselves, but for their country." How simple that thought. So long as our nation breeds patriots like you, defenders who look past the hot political rhetoric of our day and rally to our flag, that Army tradition of serving our country will never die. To a high and remarkable degree, the American people respect you. We in the Department of Defense recognize that there are a lot of passions running about in our country, as there ought to be in a vibrant republic. But for those privileged to wear the cloth of our nation, to serve in the United States Army, you stand the ramparts. Unapologetic, apolitical, defending our experiment in self-governance, and you hold the line. You hold the line. Thank you. You hold the line, faithful to duty, confronting our nation's foes with implacable will, knowing that if there's a hill to climb, waiting will not make it any smaller. You hold the line, true to honor, living by a moral code regardless of who is watching, knowing that honor is what we give ourselves for a life of meaning. You hold the line, loyal to country and defending the Constitution, and defending our fundamental freedoms, knowing from your challenging years here on the Hudson that loyalty only counts where there are 100 reasons not to be. Behind me, across Lusk Reservoir, stands a memorial dedicated to the American soldier. On it are inscribed the words, "The lives and destinies of valiant Americans are entrusted to your care and your leadership." You have been sharpened through one of the finest educational opportunities in America, given to you by the American people via General Caslin's superb faculty, who expect admirable leadership by example from you as soldier leaders. My view of a great leader is the player coach. We need coaches, men and women who know themselves, who take responsibility for themselves, coaching their soldiers to be at the top of their game. Every soldier in your platoon will know your name the day you step in front of them. Your responsibility is to know them. Learn their hopes and dreams teach them the difference between a mistake and a lack of discipline. If your troops make mistakes, look in the mirror and figure out how to coach them better. And while we will never tolerate a lack of discipline in the U.S. Army, we must not create a zero-defect environment, because that would suffocate initiative and aggressiveness, the two attributes most vital to battlefield success. In leading soldiers, thank you. In leading soldiers, you will have what F. Scott Fitzgerald called riotous excursions with privileged glimpses into the human heart. So recognize that you should never let your passion for excellence to neutralize your compassion for the soldiers you serve and who will follow you into harm's way. Remember that when the chips are down, it will be the spirits of your often rambunctious soldiers that will provide you the reservoir of courage you will need to draw upon. Rest assured that nothing you will face will be worse than Shiloh. Nothing can faze the U.S. Army when our soldiers believe in themselves. The chips were down in the freezing cold days before Christmas 1944, when the Nazi Army was on the attack in the Ardennes. A sergeant in a retreating tank spotted a fellow American digging a foxhole. The GI, Private First Class Martin, looked up and said to the sergeant in the tank, "Are you looking for a safe place?" "Yeah," answered the tanker. "Well, buddy," the private said with a drawl, "just pull your vehicle behind me. I'm the 82nd Airborne, and this is as far as the bastards are going." And that is the Army that is being entrusted to your care. On the battlefield, my fine young soldiers, no one wins on their own. Teams win battles, and if you can win the trust and affection of your soldiers, they will win all the battles for you. If you wish to be a credit to our nation and to your family, you must carry West Point's ethos everywhere you go and practice every day the integrity that builds your character. For when destiny taps you on the shoulder and thrusts you into a situation that's tough beyond words, when you're sick and you've been 3 days without sleep, when you've lost some of your beloved troops and the veneer of civilization wears thin, by having lived a disciplined life, you'll be able to reach inside and find the strength that your country is counting on. Now, you are privileged to be embarking on this journey because you're going to learn things about yourself that others will never know. And we can all in this stadium today see the storm clouds gathering. Our enemies are watching. They are calculating and hoping America's military will turn cynical, that we will lose our selfless spirit. They hope our country no longer produces young people willing to shoulder the patriot's burden, to willingly face danger and discomfort. By your commitment, you will prove the enemy wrong, dead wrong. We, Americans, are not made of cotton candy. You're a U.S. soldier. You are a U.S. soldier, and you hold the line. The class of 2017 now joins an army that left bloody footprints at Valley Forge, an army that defeated the Nazis' last gasp at Bastogne. Your class will certainly be remembered for an army football team that took to the field of friendly strife and beat Navy. But you will also be remembered for the history that you're about to write. And when you turn over your troops to their next commander, they will be as good or better than you received them. Now, I may not have had the pleasure of knowing each of you personally, but I have very high expectations of you. Your country has very high expectations of you. And we are confident you will not let us down. Because while we may not know you personally, we do know your character. West Point character. So fight. so fight for our ideals and our sacred things, incite in others respect and love for our country and our fellow Americans, and leave this country greater and more beautiful than you inherited it. For that is the duty of every generation. To the families here today, I can only say thank you. Apples don't fall far from the tree. Thank you for the men and women that you raised to become soldiers. And thank you to old shipmate General Caslin and your team who coached these members of the Long Gray Line. They will write the Army's story, and in so doing, they will carry your spirits into our nation's history. For duty, for honor, for country, hold the line. Congratulations, class of 2017. May God bless America. Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. You hear those speeches, and you know, there's a lot of people that will hear those kind of things, and they will laugh and they will ridicule, and you know, you look at them, they're so not part of our culture, and our culture, the American culture needs that. Okay, and they need more than General Mattis's slogans. They love his slogans. Okay, but they need, you know, what have you seen in the newspaper? We're not cotton candy. You know, what keeps you awake at night? Nothing. I keep other people awake at night. You know, and they love those little buzzwords. What they need, right? They need the substance of the speech. They need the substance of the speech. So one of the things I think is so good about these guys being where they're at is that the nation gets a dose of it. Okay, the nation gets a dose of it, and I love how General Mattis carries the standard. He has become, in the Trump administration, a bit of a combination of the State Department, and you know, Rex Tillerson goes with him. Mattis is very deferential towards him, but I think most people look at Mattis as embodying both the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense. And the speech is it's a great speech. He uses words very precisely. The other thing he doesn't like is he doesn't like applause when he's speaking. He considers his speech, right, his duty, and he has something important that he wants to impart. That's the way he is. He sees applause as vanity. I mean, he wants no part of it. It's part of what he is. And it's part of the image that he's cultivated. I'll tell you a quick personal story. He told me that there was to be, at his change of command, that there was to be no award for him, and what else did he want? And in no other way, shape, or form would he be honored. It would be a short change of command, and that he would turn over the standard of the 1st Marine Division to General Natonsky, and then he would leave. The MEF found out about it, and it's one of the MEF subordinate commands. So the MEF commander had a vote, and he voted. Now, it was unbeknownst to us. I don't know if Colonel Dunford knew about it. But when General Mattis found out about it, his eyes were coming out of his head. He pointed at me. He said, get in my office right now. And so I go down to his office, and he glares at me, and he says, what is this? And I didn't know anything about it, and I just looked at him and said, I don't know. He said, you don't know anything about this. And I said, no, sir, I don't. I said, you told me that there would be no award, that there would be nothing. And if you look at the program, the way it's been drawn up by the division, there's nothing that mentions, and he showed me somebody's speaking part and General Mattis's award and blah, 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 blah. And I said, so that's not the division ceremony. And he just stared a hole right through me. But I had learned, you know, if he, again, what does a guy like that demand? He demands loyalty. And actually, you want to know what I think precipitated the conversation? Was I went to him, that's what caused the glare. What happened was I heard through the grapevine that he was going to be presented with the Legion of Merit, and I knew that he would be ripshit about that, that he wanted no award. And so he's in his office, and I went in. And I said, sir, do you have a minute? And he said, sure. He said, what's up? And I said, there's something I think I need to tell you. You're going to be presented with an award at the change of command. And with that, he looked at me, and I thought his head was going to explode. And he said, I told you there would be no award. And I said, sir, it's not coming from the division. I said, and I handed him, that's when I handed him the program. I handed him the program, and I said, this is our program. I said, but the MEF is coordinating this. And he and General Conway didn't always see eye to eye, to say the least. And so he was pissed. So he starts yelling at me. I told you. I learned how to take his ass chewing dry. You just stand there, man, you wait till he's done. And then I just looked at him and I said, sir, I found out about this 15 minutes ago. I got wind of it. And I said, I thought you should know. It's the first I've heard about it. And he just looked at me. He said, got it. And then he closed his door. I think he called up General Conway and protested. And I think Conway told him, you don't have a vote. And so, it was moderately uncomfortable. Moderately uncomfortable. But, no, he's, and as I said, the nation needs more of that kind of eyeball to eyeball leadership. It needs more selfless, committed to the nation leadership, and less this political nonsense that we see, that we see on TV all the time. I hope whoever this contractor is, I hope they send him or her to jail. Evidently, it's a woman. And so I hope they send her to jail. She's a DOD contractor. And she leaked an NSA report about a top secret NSA report to a website. A 25-year-old Reality Lee winner of Augusta, Georgia, appeared in court on Monday after being arrested in her home over the weekend. Winner, who works as a contractor for Pluribus International Corporation, allegedly leaked the report in early May. A federal official told NBC News that she had, in fact, given it to The Intercept. According to the document, it was the Russian military intelligence that conducted the cyber attacks last year. Specifically, operatives from the Russian General Staff Main Intelligence Directorate, the GRU, are said to have targeted employees at U.S. election software company last August and then again in October. While the name of the company is unclear, the report refers to an undisclosed product made by VR Systems, an electronic voting services and equipment vendor in Florida that has contracts in 8 states, including New York. The hackers were given a cyber espionage mandate specifically directed at U.S. and foreign elections. How about that? If it's electronic. If it's electronic, then assume the Russians will get into it. And then here's the report. Pretty amazing stuff. Pretty amazing stuff. All right, we're going to take a break. The Gunner's going to join us here. And it is the 73rd anniversary of the invasion of Normandy. So you're gonna hear a little Normandy audio. I have about 18 minutes of an interview that I did with a guy who was at Normandy. So you're gonna hear that as we remember one of the greatest amphibious operation of all time. I know it pains me. Wasn't conducted by the Marine Corps. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.